Pseudopod, episode 104, August 22nd, 2008. This week's story, The Book in the Earth, by Lavi Tidha. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm your host, Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from Lavi Tidha. Lavi's anthology, Hebrew Punk, was released through Apex Publications last year, and this is his first appearance with us. Your narrator this week is the zombie astronaut himself, Mr. Ralph Walters. So, check the end papers and get ready to haggle about the price, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
The Book in the Earth, by Lavi Tidha. "Excuse me," said the old man by the door. He was hidden from view behind the bookshelves, and though Gerald had seen him come in, he couldn't see who he was talking to. "Does the presence of this chapter make it the first true edition or the second state? I can never remember, you see, whether Fathers is the missing chapter or the correct one."
"The pulped version, of course," said a gruff voice behind the books.
"Ah, of course. Thank you."
Gerald sat behind the counter, wrapped up in a coat, wondering what on earth they were talking about. He applied for the job at the small bookshop just off Charing Cross the week before, and to his surprise, the owner, a short, stocky man who looked more like a bare-knuckled boxer than a bookseller, hired him.
"You start on Monday," he said. "And don't let the bastard steal anything or spend too long in the basement. If they start tapping on the walls or doing any other strange shit, kick them out."
Mr. Mendoza seemed to have a low opinion of his customers. After a week of being left in charge of the shop, however, Mr. Mendoza having left for an unspecified length of time on what he called, in his strangely accented English, a trade trip, Gerald began to wonder. The shop, despite its closeness to both Charing Cross Road and the posher Cecil Court, didn't seem to enjoy the same attentions of the book-buying public. Tourists passed it as if it didn't exist. Londoners would occasionally stop, examine the window display, which Gerald suspected hadn't been changed in years by the thick layer of dust on the books, find nothing they could possibly want, and walk on. The stock itself was a strange mixture of ancient mold-covered volumes of 18th-century poetry, new sci-fi paperbacks that sat bright yet lonely in an unkempt pile in the basement, jacketless copies of popular fiction, or at least, he thought, fiction that was once possibly popular, and the odd volumes of encyclopedias. The signs bore no relation to the content of the shelves. He was disrupted from daydreaming with the sound of another conversation, taking place behind the shelves by the door that led to the basement.
"Look," a booming bass voice announced invisibly. "You can quite clearly see that all 5 first edition points are present as called for, so what's the problem?"
A tenor, broken by age, said slowly,
"I am not convinced this is the genuine first, Godot. Look at the quality of the paper, for example."
Gerald sighed and returned to daydreaming. Odd volumes of encyclopedias, he thought, returning with some difficulty to the thread of his musing. The shop itself was odd as well. Like its neighbors, it was larger underground than above it, with steep concrete steps leading to a maze of small, artificially created rooms, alcoves really, in which books piled in a mess of paper in every available space. So far, that was normal, at least from what Gerald saw of the other shops. But then, there were the noises. He was about to dwell further on that, his mind forgetting the elderly gentleman behind the shelves, when a forceful knock, which turned out to have been produced by the impact of walking stick on counter, made him jump. Standing in front of the counter was the elderly gentleman, a walking stick with a head in the shape of a raven in one hand, a book in the other.
"I would like," he announced in a reedy, high voice, "to purchase this book."
Gerald hesitated, then parted with his daydream. "Of course, sir," he said politely. He accepted the book, opened it to check the price stenciled on the front free end papers. That would be £12.50, he said.
"Ha!"
The old man leaned his cane against the counter and began rummaging through his clothes, a process which took a couple of minutes. Finally, he fished out a handful of crumpled notes from a pocket somewhere and measured out the exact amount carefully in front of Gerald.
"A bargain," he announced.
Gerald accepted the money, rang it through the ancient till, and put the book, a volume of epic fantasy by the look of it, into the bag.
Excuse me, he said, hesitating only a little, but I couldn't help overhearing your conversation.
Really? Said the elderly gentleman suspiciously. I must say that's rather rude.
Only I work here, you see, Gerald tried again.
Really?
There was something about the old man's voice which forbade any further conversation. Nevertheless, Gerald tried a third time.
I couldn't help but notice, he began apologetically. You and your friends, I mean, you and the other gentlemen who shop here.
The elderly gentleman regarded him with a look of deep-seated suspicion, into which loathing was beginning to creep in.
I mean, do you belong to a book club or something?
All sound in the shop ceased, and a total silence settled briefly on the books like dust.
A book club? Said the elderly gentleman. A book club?
He looked like he was about to erupt, like a long, dormant, ancient volcano who was suddenly given new life and was going to make the most of it, destroying villages and preserving, if possible, Gerald in molten lava. Then, to Gerald's relief, the door swung open. A blast of cold air shot through the shop like a vengeful zephyr, and Mr. Mendoza walked in. At the sight of him, the elderly gentleman froze, and feelings flickered on his face like a series of quick flashes. Hatred, envy, settling at last on fear.
Get out! Mendoza cried. All of you, and you, Everett,
he said, addressing the elderly gentleman.
That's a second issue, but since you've already bought it, you're stuck with it. Don't think I don't know my own stock. There are no bargains here.
And he repeated it, more slowly, with words that cut through the air of the shop.
There are no bargains here.
The elderly gentleman, Everett, Mr. Mendoza called him, picked up the raven-headed cane in one hand and his second-issue book in the other, and without a word squeezed past Mr. Mendoza and out the door.
What are you waiting for?
Mr. Mendoza called.
You, Godo, and you, Lilith, get out of here. The book is not for you.
Stooped and elderly figures materialized from behind bookshelves. There was a giant, dressed in what seemed to be ancient Victorian garments, and a wizened old lady who moved in quick, jerky motions. A dwarf, with white hair spouting from his ears and a pair of slim reading glasses that threatened to fall off his nose, and several more, wheezing on their journey on the stairs from the basement. They all filed away without saying a word, their faces expressing the same mosaic of feelings Gerald had seen on Everett's face. As the last one, a hunchback man with fingers like talons, passed through the door, Mr. Mendoza shut it with a bang. Silence settled again. From somewhere that seemed far, far away, Gerald imagined he could hear the sound of rustling pages. Mr. Mendoza's energy seemed to have suddenly left him. He unwrapped himself of several layers of coats, scarves, and sweaters, and came to sit behind the counter next to Gerald.
How was your trip? Gerald asked.
Mr. Mendoza shook his head.
As could be expected.
He seemed to shake himself, and looking at Gerald carefully, said,
And how do you find working at the shop?
Gerald wasn't sure what to answer. There was something about the place, about the owner, certainly about the customers, that made him uneasy. Yet the job was straightforward enough, and it certainly paid better than what he was led to believe junior booksellers usually received.
Fine, he said, equally careful. There's been no trouble of the sort you warned me against. I didn't sell many books, though.
Mr. Mendoza grimaced.
All for the better, he said. I hate having to replace stock.
He seemed to sag again.
Go home, he said to Gerald. I'm closing the shop early today. I'll see you tomorrow.
Since Gerald had no bag and his coat was already on, he was out the door in less than a minute. He turned to say goodbye, but the door was already closed. The lights were off, and a rusted sign announced the shop was closed. He walked home, thinking about bookshops that didn't sell books, and customers that, for all their talk and their prodigious time they spent inside, didn't buy any. The next Monday, Mr. Mendoza sent Gerald down to the basement with a basket of food. The basket contained a mixed selection of the kind of foods available around Leicester Square. Cold pizza slices, egg rolls, samosas, a small selection of sushi in a plastic case, a bag of rapidly cooling chips that smelled strongly of vinegar. It was as if someone, Gerald presumed it was Mr. Mendoza himself, went around all the takeaways in the area assembling whatever cheap food they had. Apart from the food, there was also a full bottle of Chivas Regal in the basket.
take it down to the basement, Mr. Mendoza had said, and leave it between the World War II Naval History and the Judaica sections.
The shop had been ever quieter than usual since Mr. Mendoza returned from his trip. Gerald had seen the giant, was that Godot, return a couple of times, as did the woman, Lilith. Of the elderly gentleman with a cane, there was no sign. Gerald lifted the picnic basket and made his way downstairs. That, he thought as he went, continuing his reverie of the week before, was the other strange aspect of the shop. Its dimensions seemed somehow wrong. There were cold drafts in places no wind should have been. Sections of books seemed to mysteriously shift. The Berber cookery section, for instance, which seemed to have moved from its original position by the hidden downstairs toilet to the alcove halfway down the stairs and then, inexplicably, next to the Shakespearean drama section. There were also the sounds. Gerald didn't like the sounds. Mostly, they felt and sounded as if someone, or something, was moving behind the walls. The feeling had become so bad that Gerald was tempted to knock on the walls. Mr. Mendoza's warning, however, and the fear of losing this newfound job, stopped him from attempting that particular course of action. Also, he was a little bit afraid that someone, or something, might knock back. He almost reached the basement when he heard voices speaking just below. Strange, he didn't remember any customers coming down here.
Week to the new year, a deep bass voice Gerald was pretty certain belonged to the giant Godot.
Mendoza,
the other voice was so weak Gerald had a problem making out the words.
The 36, assembled, get rid of, the guardian is.
Shut up,
Godot's voice said suddenly. The voice seemed to echo around Gerald more than it should have, startling him so that he nearly dropped the bag, and his feet, searching for sudden purchase, skidded down the last few steps and led him inexorably forward. The giant's mass stopped him.
Snooping,
wheezed the barely audible voice coming from Gerald's left, and from what he could tell, from somewhere barely above the floor.
Skulking, lurking.
The voice wheezed painfully and subsided, the effort having exhausted its speaker. How did you get here? Gerald demanded, shaken. He turned away from the giant and looked at his companion, finding without much surprise it was the dwarf he'd seen in the shop before.
We're customers, you little rookie. We're here to shop.
His reading glasses threatened to fall off his long, narrow nose. Godot's rumble stopped the dwarf.
My apologies, he said, patting Gerald on the back and nearly toppling him over. Actually, you might be able to help us. We were just looking for the, Berber cooking section. Since my friend here is something of a gourmet, we thought it was down here, but we don't seem to be able to find it.
Gerald clutched at the giant's question like an anchor. Of course, he said, nodding rapidly to show his complete understanding. Of course. Then, seeing as they were both looking at him, one from above and one from below, he took hold of himself and said, It should be upstairs, next to Shakespearean drama, he added, hoping that both sections were still where he had last seen them.
Thank you, Godot said.
You have been most helpful,
said the dwarf, in a tone that clearly indicated his complete and utter loathing of Gerald.
Most helpful.
He measured Gerald up and down, and his mouth set into an unpleasant line when he found the picnic basket.
Feeding the rats,
was his parting comment, and he and the giant began climbing the stairs. Gerald didn't know. He stood still for a long moment, listening to the pair's careful steps on the concrete, the dwarf's wheezes and the giant's loud breath, when finally, after what seemed like hours, their noise stopped. He located the place between World War II Naval History and Judaica and put down the basket carefully. Gerald retreated away from the basket, but did not go back upstairs. Mr. Mendoza would hardly notice him gone, since no one was likely to actually buy anything, and there were too many unanswered questions for him to think about. Like who or what with the 36? Or the Guardian? And what did they mean there was a week to the new year? Gerald hadn't checked the calendar recently, but he was pretty sure it wasn't quite December yet. He retreated to the French Impressionist Painter section, a large, imposing bookcase with a squat, three-legged stool besides it, and sat down. This corner of the basement was unexpectedly warm. Gerald soon felt his eyelids drooping. His back rested against the wall. He was comfortable. A curious sound, like the rustling of pages in a book, woke him with a start. Eyes thick with sleep, Gerald looked at the basket. It was gone. He walked to the bookshelves, but to his dismay discovered the Judaica section had somehow been replaced with History of the Crusades. Where had the food gone? He could still smell the vinegar reek of the chips. Possessed by an anger he couldn't quite explain, Gerald began to remove books from the shelves, piling them in untidy heaps on the floor, trying to clear the shelves so he could examine them. There was nothing behind the books, nothing remarkable, just worn brown wood and a lot of dust. No longer caring for Mr. Mendoza's cryptic instructions, Gerald began knocking on the wood, which made a hollow, echoey sound, as if there was something vast and empty directly behind it. A sound. A sound from behind the bookcase made him stop, and anger made him bold enough to put his ear to the wood. Someone was singing, in a strange language that Gerald didn't recognize. Someone with a high, reedy voice that tumbled over words unsteadily. Then there were the hiccups. He heard the tumble of glass, the song intermingled with drunken hiccups. Gerald, half with fear and half with a sort of quivering excitement, knocked on the wood. The song stopped. The hiccups continued. Gerald knocked harder. "Who's there?" he cried. "Who are you?" There was a silence on the other side of the wall. Then, nearly knocking Gerald off balance, the bookcase began to move, opening onto a dark doorway. There was a man standing there. His long hair hung from his head in white and gray, dirty dreadlocks, and a hawk nose dominated his face, seeming to point at Gerald accusingly. His eyes blinked rapidly in the light of the cellar. Behind him was a consuming darkness.
"What do you want?"
he demanded. Spittle and the sour smell of Chevis Regal hit Gerald.
"Who are you?" Gerald said. This couldn't really be happening to him, he decided. He must still be asleep. People did not, as a rule, live in the walls of bookshops. He was pretty sure of that. The smell was real enough, though. The ancient man in the doorway stretched himself up until his head nearly banged the low ceiling.
"I am the guardian,"
he announced.
"Who the fuck are you?"
"I work here." The guardian stooped and stared at him.
"Can't be doing too much work sleeping on a stool in the basement now, can you?"
he said. "How did you..." "Look, it doesn't matter. I want to know what's going on. I want..." The old man shushed him. In the silence, the sound of two pairs of feet climbing down into the basement could be clearly heard.
"Quick, get inside,"
the guardian said, and pushed Gerald through the doorway without ceremony. The bookshelves shut, and Gerald found himself in complete darkness. The guardian's bony fingers closed on Gerald's wrist with surprising force, and he was dragged deeper into the darkness in the guardian's wake.
"Land of Phoenix,"
the guardian half whispered and spat as he led Gerald away.
"Parasites! Halfwits! Leeches!"
Down invisible stairs he dragged him, through narrow corridors that smelled inexplicably of brine and salt, navigating his way with an unnatural ease through the darkness. The silence overwhelmed Gerald. He must still be dreaming, he reassured himself, and let the old man lead him, further and further down, into the bowels of the earth. At last they stopped. Long minutes have passed. Gerald heard the sounds of waves, smelled the sharp, clear smell of brine, and the guardian's breath of whiskey fumes. The old man let go of his wrist at last, and he was fumbling in the darkness. Then a small light came into being with a smell of sulfur, allowing Gerald to look at his surroundings. He couldn't look far. It was only a small light, a match applied to an old kerosene burner. They were standing on a kind of shore, with black, impenetrable water lapping at their feet. The ground gleamed a dull light, like polished metal. Gerald bent down to look closer and discovered it was made of thousands upon thousands of old coins, polished blank. Gerald had enough.
"What?"
he said slowly, elucidating every word carefully.
"Is going on?"
A heavy hand landed on his shoulder, making him jump, and a face appeared in the ring of light thrown by the lamp, looking weathered and harsh in the flickering flame. It was Mr. Mendoza. Gerald woke up with a start. His head felt raw against the wall, and a little drool trailed down from his mouth and onto his collar. The books he had, or thought he had, removed from the shelves were back on them. More than that, this section of the shop was once again Judaica rather than the History of the Crusades. The basket, however, remained gone.
He looked at his watch and... shit. He had been asleep for the best part of the day. He ran upstairs. His encounter, or dream encounter, forgotten in his haste to get upstairs. Yet when he got there, he found Mr. Mendoza locking up as if nothing had happened, and before he knew it, he was once again on the other side of the door. The sign said closed, and it was raining. A little disoriented, Gerald decided to take the long way home and begin trudging through the rain and the crowded streets of central London. There was a book in the earth. Snatches of dream came back to him, Mr. Mendoza's voice echoing in the darkness. There was a book in the earth. At the deep, deep bowels of London it rested, beyond the layers of city, basements, foundations, below tube lines and the sewers and the piping. Warded and secured, behind earth, behind water. Here Mr. Mendoza waved his hand as if indicating many other elements, too numerous to mention.
The first five books of the Bible, Mr. Mendoza said, and his voice acquired a deeper resonance, almost as if something else was speaking through him. The Jews call the Torah. And it is believed the five books were written by God himself.
Gerald stopped walking. A strange feeling was creeping on him, as if invisible eyes were examining him. He looked at the front of the shop he was standing beside, and caught the pale face of the woman, Lilith, materializing like fog in the reflection before disappearing. They were following him. He hurried his steps, thinking. The story goes that the book, the actual, physical, tangible object that was God's first and only copy, the book, it could have been clay tablets, of course, Mr. Mendoza added at this point, and smiled a small smile, was always guarded by a group of immortal men and women known as the 36 Zadoks, the lamed Vanek in Hebrew numeration. They gained strength to live from the power of the book, and so guarded it throughout the long centuries, through the time of prophets and kings in the diaspora, through emperors and conquerors. But the lame Vaneks, the guardians interrupted at this point, became corrupt. The long years mauled them, the passing of time dulled them, and they became greedy, lewd, brutal. The guardian's delivery was a little too pat. However, it was finally taken from them, and by whom? Here the guardian allowed himself a small smile of his own. Was not told. Suffice it to say that it was. But wherever the book went, wherever it was hidden, the 36 followed. They have aged and they have diminished, and they needed, hungered for, the book.
Why me? Gerald asked.
It seemed a reasonable question. And all Mr. Mendoza would say was, random element. And the guardian said nothing but looked worried. Which, in turn, worried Gerald, who discovered he didn't trust Mr. Mendoza or the guardian one whit. Gerald stopped again. Heavy footsteps sounded behind, and as he turned, he was able to catch Godo, the giant, disappearing behind a corner. There was a book in the earth. And the lame Vanex, the old, depleted men and women Gerald had unwittingly served at the corner bookshop these past 2 weeks, wanted it. The dwarf's words came back to Gerald.
What happens in a week? He asked.
The guardian and Mr. Mendoza exchanged a quick glance.
In a week, Mr. Mendoza said, is Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. The year 5763. The lame Vanex became stronger and weaker at that time. It is the end of the cycle of the year, and they grow stronger. But they must also reaffirm their connection to life, and their connection to the book. At that time. Otherwise, they grow weaker. They will try, Mr. Mendoza said, with an air of finality, to gain possession of the book then. It was a week later. The morning began gray and wet, and the day continued the same, growing damper, darker. It was a strange week. Gerald felt as if he were being pursued by old people. Their images appeared wherever he went, making no attempt at stealth, making sure he knew they were there, watching him. In the shop, the same people had been getting increasingly more frantic, arguing about obscure first edition points, sneaking into the basement and knocking on walls with increasing desperation. It was a relationship Gerald didn't understand. It made him suspect, more and more, that he had dreamt the whole thing.
Why were the lame Vanix, if that's what they were, allowed in the shop in the first place? And, in fact, they didn't look like a bunch of corrupt immortals, just a group of lonely, elderly men and women who seemed to treat the shop like their social club. Mr. Mendoza was rude to them, there was no doubt, but he didn't deter them from coming into the shop, which, as Gerald realized in the very beginning, didn't seem to attract any other customers.
"The number line is correct,"
a voice behind taxidermy and naval history said excitedly.
"No, no, no," a murmuring voice interrupted him. "You need to look at the advertisements at the back to determine it's true first."
Faint voices coalesced into a distant, tuneless song. As he approached the landing, the voices resolved themselves into a circle of people. They were all there, Godot and Lilith and the dwarf, and the man called Everett, who thought he had a bargain with Chapter 16. The lame Vanix were arranged in a circle in the middle of the basement, candles forming a Star of David formation on the floor. As they sang, the star seemed to flare, and the hidden door the guardian had appeared from flared in response, revealing its location. More singing, and the candles flared again, and the bookcase shuddered, turning on its side and revealing the hidden entrance. The lame Vanix arranged themselves into a neat line and shuffled through the darkness ahead. Looking at them, Gerald couldn't help but feel compassion for them, these men and women who were so driven, so spent. And he wondered again why Mr. Mendoza has allowed them in the shop. Perhaps, Gerald reasoned, Mr. Mendoza needed them there. Perhaps more than they needed the book needed them to sustain it. He followed them into the caverns, discovering without surprise that the invisible route the guardians had taken him by before was now lit with candles. The lame Vanix made their way slowly past the candles, heading down and down, Gerald following, until they reached at last the Black Lake. There, on the shore, stood the guardian and Mr. Mendoza. Their features seemed to swim in the flickering light, gaining expressions at once grotesque and beatific. They stood on the shore, and behind them sat a black boat, ebony dark. The lame Vanix shuffled toward them. They remained in the queue they were in, and the dwarf, who was the first in line, stepped forward and was assisted into the boat by the guardian, who got in beside him. The boat sailed without a sound away from the shore and disappeared into the inky darkness. Gerald waited, worry eating away at his mind, as Mr. Mendoza's face contorted and changed, and as the elderly men and women waited. It wasn't long. Soon the boat returned. The dwarf climbed out, assisted by the guardian. He looked truly ancient now, and brittle, like a dry leaf being blown apart by the wind. Then Lilith got on the boat. Gerald had to stop it all, somehow. He made his way covertly to the wall of the cavern, away from the lame Vanix in the boat. The dark water lapped at his feet. Cursing himself silently, he removed his socks and shoes, followed by his jumper and trousers, until he stood there in briefs and t-shirt. He stepped into the water and discovered it was warm. He began to swim, as silently as he could, and follow the boat as it was leaving the shore. The circle of candles receded quickly from view. He followed the boat by its darkness, that seemed more profound than the one that was simply the absence of light. The boat docked at a small, dark island. There were no candles, no lights here, and Gerald had trouble finding purchase in the muddy shore. When he finally stood on land again, he thought he lost them. There was no sign of the guardian or his charge. Then, a keening noise, and as he went to investigate, he found them. The guardian, gaunt and elongated, like a praying mantis, and Lilith, her face changing in torment, and her mouth producing a thin, agonized cry. Something that could have been a book twisted and warped in Lilith's arms. Dark typefaces melted like black wax, clay shapes changed to flickering pages that made a sound Gerald recognized from his dreams. It set his teeth on edge. He couldn't watch this anymore, couldn't watch the book suck away what remained of the old woman's life. Trying not to think too much of what he was doing, Gerald jumped at the old woman and tried to wrestle the book from her hands. He could feel himself burning, felt as if he were hit by an electric shock, feeling as if needles were being driven with some force into his flesh. Through the burning haze of the book, he could see the guardian's face clear for the first time. He saw the hollow cheeks and bony skull and the taut skin surrounding deep-set eyes that seemed to cry out to him. He felt as if the guardian were thanking him silently as he fought the thing in his arms until at last he ran, skin on fire, into the black waters of the lake and held the struggling thing underwater until it was at last exhumed and began to sink further and further into the inky water until no sign of it remained. Gerald crawled back to the island. The guardian and Lilith were gone. He lay on the sand, too tired to think, and he closed his eyes. Pale rays of sun filtered through the windows, warming him. The shop was empty. He woke up, feeling lightheaded. Outside, car horns and the smell of 100 foods and the feel of dew on his face made him suddenly smile, and he turned and locked the door carefully behind him, leaving the close sign untouched. The street was surprisingly empty of elderly people, and Gerald hoped they had gone somewhere nice for the winter and tried to picture them on the beach in Hawaii, wearing flowery shirts and sipping cocktails. He hoped Mr. Mendoza, too, was gone, and he hoped that he had survived, that the loss of the book didn't end him. Feeling awake, feeling alive, Gerald walked home.
Books are chimerical, changing not only due to the circumstance you find them in, but who you are when you do. Think about it, the same basic undercurrent of knowledge is now available to basically everyone in the developed world. The same knowledge, the same stories, accessible in millions of unique ways and places by millions of unique people. Sometimes you'll be entertained, sometimes you'll be bored senseless, and sometimes you'll be changed. I've read three books that have changed overtly how I think and act, and I know with an absolute certainty that there are dozens of others whose influence is much more subtle. We become, after a while, libraries, treasure troves of information, carriers of a unique strain of meme, be it a story, a joke, a poem, a fact. Every book changes us. Everything we read becomes part of us. Case in point, on Apollo 16, Charlie Duke became the only man in human history to date to fall over on the moon. I've carried that for years. Now you're carrying it too. Now, the point though, is that really good books don't just do this, but they also ask who you are and show you who you could be. Really great books have that effect in subtly different ways every time you read them, and all-time classics frequently feature a lot more space battles. Anyway, sharks gotta swim, rats gotta fly, or something, and I remain the guy asking for your money. We rely on you to pay our authors, so if you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you won't regret it. Join us next week for a story from Jeff Carlson about art, photos, and sheer blind terror. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and Pseudopod would like to keep this handy for close encounters.